Prospect Mania. They're all getting called up. We'll react to Jose Berríos. Do not call him Berríos. Sean Manaea and more here on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. Hey, good morning, Al, Heath.
Good morning,
Chris,
Adam.
All of you. You jumped in too early, Al.
Call him Berríos.
Don't do it. I'm intentionally calling him Berríos until he pitches well.
Okay. That's fair. He hasn't earned correct pronunciation yet. Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. Email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We have great emails today. Looking forward to reading some of them, including one about some less obvious buy low candidates. I do want to promote a few things real quick here, though. Podcastawards.com. We're asking you to help us out and go to podcastawards.com, and in the sports and recreation category, actually want you to nominate the fantasy football podcast. Not fantasy baseball, I know, but, you know, I get into the reasons why, but just do us a favor and nominate the, this is exactly what you have to do. CBS Sports Fantasy Football Today podcast. And then it asks for a URL. You have to use our RSS feed for that. I'm not going to give that out in the air because it's long and I don't know it off the top of my head. But, if you go to cbssports.com/podcast, you can submit our URL there. You can see all the URLs, the RSS feeds, that is. So just click on the RSS one there, get the URL, submit that on podcastawards.com. CBS Sports Fantasy Football Today podcast, would really appreciate that. Also, tonight, NFL draft. Yeah! We have live coverage of the NFL draft every night and day, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday on cbssports.com. For you fantasy people, Dave and Jamie are going to be reacting to the picks, giving their fantasy takes. And of course, we'll have Nick Costos, Ryan Bass, Pete Prisco, Kirk Morrison, I think more than that on the show, giving their draft analysis. If you're tired,
John Beeson, maybe?
Oh, John Beeson, yeah.
All kinds of people.
I think Dane Brugler as well. So, if you're tired of the, same old coverage that you've seen every year and you want a fantasy spin as well, it's not an entirely fantasy show, but you'll love our draft show. Make sure you watch it. Woo! All right, here's what we're going to do on the show today, guys. Going to get the news.
Azer?
Yes.
Can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Go to gmail.com.
Yes.
And send a rundown for the show to everybody.
You what? I didn't send the notes?
Nope.
Well, I mean, if you want to do a surprise show.
I wanted to see how this rolled.
Yeah. I had actually tried to do this the nicer way. I sent you a G-chat.
I don't appreciate your subterfuge. I'm just going to go out and put it out in public.
It's not subterfuge. I was just trying to make it, you know, thought he could send it to us and everybody be okay.
We could do a secret show, too.
Yeah, we could do a secret. Well, I'll tell you what. But I'm going to send them right now. And as they're, you know, in the ether getting to you, what do you think we're going to talk about today?
I was telling Chris we didn't do the trivia on Tuesday that I tried to make a part of the show without ever asking you.
Yeah, we could do that.
There was something very important, not very important, but timely.
Okay.
To talk about today. You know, there's lots of pitchers still with ERAs under 2.
Sure.
Because it's this early, you could have a lot of luck involved. There's only 2 pitchers, though, still with FIPs under 2. And I think one of them is pretty obvious. It's Noah Syndergaard. He actually has a FIP under 1, which is dumb. But there's one other pitcher that has a FIP under 2 early this year. You guys know who it is?
I don't.
Jose Quintana.
Wow, it's Jose Quintana.
Is it really?
Yes.
That's great.
He has been pretty spectacular early in the year.
Let me ask you guys this. I own Jose Quintana in one league, and I sat
him
this week.
You tried not to.
I know. I tried to trade him out, but I sat him this week at the Blue Jays. Did anybody else make that mistake?
I don't own him, but if I did, I would have.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do own him in other leagues, and I did start him.
Okay. Good for
you.
Of
course you did, Al.
All right.
He's almost a must start.
Oh, what do you is Jose Quintana about to have his best year? Is he going to be the same old reliable but not spectacular Jose Quintana?
Here's something I find a little bit strange. He has a 35.8% fly ball rate, which is his second highest of his career. He has a 34.6% hard contact rate, which is the highest of his career, and he has not given up a home run. So that's a little surprising to me and wholly unsustainable.
Yes.
I don't think this is probably his breakout year, but it could, like,
this breakout month.
It could be the best year of his career.
He's definitely going to win more than 9 games.
I would not say that for sure.
I think he's absolutely going to. I'm going to say 100%.
Yeah.
I can't believe he's never won more than 9, but that is.
I feel like he's one of the more undervalued players in fantasy just because at the end of the year, he never looks all that great in the rankings because he only wins 9 games for some reason. But like 3 straight years of 200 innings, like mid 3s ERA every year, like he's pretty good.
Yes, I think of him as kind of the current day Hiroki Kuroda. Like he's just good, you know. Yeah. He's just good and consistent and under the radar.
And it always feels like he goes like 3 rounds later than he actually should.
Yeah.
Yep. And he was one of my biggest regrets in that auction league, that the one league I have him in. I think I paid like $6 or something like that for Quintana, and I was like, why did I do that? But funny how things work out. All right, good stuff, Heath. That's good. We're going to talk about the pitching prospects. Let me get the news out of the way. You all have your notes now, so let me get the big news out of the way. Not a big newsy day, thankfully. Houston Street, though, could be headed to the DL with an oblique strain. What percent of your fab would you spend on Joe Smith?
Not much.
Sub 5.
Why?
Well, I don't imagine, like, right as of right now, we don't think this is a season-ending oblique strain, right?
No, but you know, this could be at least a month. I could be. You never know. It could be 15 days.
Well, just to put this in perspective, in 15-team mixed Tout Wars Roto, I spent 55 out of 1,000 budget on Kalem Kothub, who doesn't necessarily have a closer job. For somebody who's going to get some chances in the short term and we know is pretty good in a 12-team mixed, I think he's definitely worth more than 5.
Right. Well,
but not a lot more. I'm not breaking the bank.
There's a chance that Kothub actually ends up being the closer for the rest of the season.
Oh yeah.
So that would be the
chance. Doesn't really exist with Joe Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay. It's short term.
You know, I would say in the 5 to 7 range.
All right. Short term, if they were both out there, Kothub and Joe Smith, who would you pick up?
Smith.
Yeah, Smith.
Yes.
Okay. And it's also not a certainty that Houston Street's going on the DL, but looks likely.
Yeah.
Yu Darvish going to begin a rehab assignment Sunday. All right. Where is Yu Darvish in your rest of season rankings, guys? Is now the time to make a play for him? Do you expect him to come back and be great? What are we thinking about Yu Darvish?
I have him right 37, and it's probably time to move him up a few spots if he's starting his rehab assignment.
I mean, he's still probably like a month away, I would
right,
guess.
But now I've got a definitive time frame. I think a month is the longest you can be on a rehab assignment, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So now I know he's coming back within the next month. Before, it was just kind of this floaty time frame. So I'd probably move him up. He's not going to go in my top 30 yet.
I'm currently the high guy on Darvish at 33, and I'm not going to move him up just because, I mean, this is sort of baked in that he's going to, you know, pitch for about 4 months out of the year. And I do worry that, I mean, there's not a great success rate in pitchers coming back from Tommy John and being, you know, what they were before. So
you have to expect some rust. You have to bake in beyond just the, like, he's not going to pitch until the end of May. You have to bake into the fact that there's a higher than otherwise chance that he could get hurt again.
Right.
All right, more news. Josh Donaldson did get back to third base after DHing for 2 straight games. Carlos Santana still leading off despite Michael Brantley being back. So that's
been a really on-again, off-again thing, right? Are they just doing that against certain types of pitchers? Because he hit 5th just a couple days ago.
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
I'll look up where he's been hitting in the order while you go through the rest of the notes.
Okay, that works even better. Miguel Sano has played 3 games at third base, so he's on his way to third base eligibility, although Plouffe should be back soon. But 2 more games for Sano to get third base eligibility. Chris, is that a big deal for you?
I mean, it helps a little bit for sure. And anytime a player can add another position, it's always better. But I don't think it like dramatically changes my view of Miguel Sano.
I think it helps more so that it makes him corner infield eligible in those roto leagues.
Yeah.
That is nice. But all right, so that's something to keep an eye on there with Sano. Cole Hamels scheduled to start Sunday, and Eddie Butler is going to replace Jorge De La Rosa in the Rockies rotation as De La Rosa is on the DL with a groin strain. Any interest in Eddie Butler, king of the deep leagues, Al Melchior?
Not even in the deep leagues.
Okay.
No thanks.
All right. Well, we will get to the prospects very, very soon. As I mentioned, Berríos made his major league debut. Manaea is going to make his debut tomorrow. And Michael Fulmer, Detroit prospect, is going to start tomorrow at Minnesota. Heath, did you find out what we're looking for?
It's going to take a minute.
Okay.
While Heath's looking, yeah. I have a couple of confessions.
Oh, okay. Hit me.
Since you bring up Sean Manaea and Michael Fulmer. So, of course, yesterday, I think we all probably got lots of Twitter questions about how do you value Manaea? How do you value Berríos? And at one point, I said I preferred Blake Snell to Manaea. And then later in the day, I flipped it.
Oh.
And and somebody noticed and pointed it out. And it's funny because when I did that, I had this sneaky feeling that something was amiss. But in between those two tweets, I had done quite a bit of research on Manaea for a piece that I wrote. And the thing I keep coming back to, and I think then maybe it was premature in putting Snell ahead, was I generally have a really hard time trusting the prospects, the pitching prospects who have control issues. And that burned me with Matt Harvey when he came up because he took a step forward when he came to the majors. But I don't think that's typical.
It burned me with Lance McCullers last year, too.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, it's you can never predict those kind of outliers. Like, you can never predict a player showing a skill that they haven't shown before. Like, it's certainly possible. Lance McCullers gets to the majors and all of a sudden his stuff plays up. But it's not like... certainly not the default assumption you should make.
Yeah. But I also just want to point out, too, that these guys are all so bunchy. I mean, even Michael Fulmer, you know, to get a closer look there, I do put him, I think, probably at the back of the list of those who've been called up aside from Aaron Blair. But it's really close. Berríos, Snell. I'm sorry, Berríos, Snell. Manaea. They're all, I think, very... very close together. It's really sort of hard to separate them.
Well, Carlos Santana has led off in four of his last five games.
I mean, that's a bigger deal in points leagues, but he also stole a second base last night. But I think it's encouraging if he's your starting first baseman in points formats. More at bats, more points. It's that simple.
I have another confession, too.
Okay.
Wow. So I was really, really tired the other day here at work, and I went out to get some lunch, and I intended to go to Arby's. And next to the Arby's, there's a Wendy's. And I was in the Wendy's line thinking I was in the Arby's line.
Oh,
and I tried
gosh.
To order a smokehouse brisket sandwich.
Oh, come on, Al.
And it didn't compute with, you know, the person who was taking my order. And I got a little bit surly because I'm like, I'm trying to order a smokehouse brisket sandwich here. And he kept on trying to say, you know, what do you mean, chicken? And then I finally looked at the menu board.
Al.
And realized I wasn't at Arby's.
The most upsetting thing about this story is that you know what you want from Arby's without looking at the menu.
Well, yeah.
You know, I disagree. I disagree. Arby's gets a bad rap, but I know what I want right now if I went to Arby's. But I don't want what Al got, but I want
Curly fries? That's really the only thing I can think of.
The beef and cheddar, dude. It's really good.
That used to be my go-to before the smokehouse brisket.
Well, have you tried the Euros?
I haven't.
Yeah, they've got Euros now.
Okay. Well, now I've got one more thing to confuse me when I'm ordering fast food.
Yeah, and like hot dogs at Burger King. What's that all about? Just crazy things.
I don't get why people are so upset by the notion of hot dogs at Burger King. Like, people are like, that's disgusting. I would never. It's a hot dog. How could Burger King screw up a hot dog?
The only thing that would disgust me is they're probably going to charge $4 for it.
I think it's like $1.29.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a hot dog.
Back to baseball. Back to baseball.
Come on.
Yeah, I'm done with confessions.
All right, let's go here. I want to talk about Wednesday standouts before we get into the prospects. How encouraged were you by Matt Harvey's start? 7 strikeouts, 2 runs in 6 innings, including a leadoff home run to Zach Cozart. But this was clearly Harvey's best start. Are you guys feeling good about him?
I would say I was mildly encouraged. I was not encouraged after the leadoff home run, but yes. Things got better after that. He still wasn't particularly efficient. There was a pretty good point through, I think he was at 60 pitches through 3 and pretty close to 80 through 4. It's not like the Reds are good, but the more strikeouts per innings is probably the most encouraging thing. I haven't looked at his velocity yet.
I watched. He was great.
Way up. He
was he was blazing fastballs last night.
Slider he sustained his velocity all the way through the end of the start. I think his last pitch was his hardest thrown pitch, or his second hardest maybe. But he averaged like 96.5 with the fastball. I think he was it was very encouraging from that standpoint.
So maybe the velocity is back and the command's not quite.
It's possible. It was a pretty good start. I mean, he got a little lucky. Devin Mesoraco kind of lined out with the bases loaded, but watching it, it seemed like he was close. Yeah, not quite there yet, but right. Getting back on the right track, and definitely the best he's looked, but that's not saying much for Harvey. And any concerns about Sonny Gray, guys? He's walking a lot of batters.
Well, it does concern me because it's not really completely out of nowhere for Gray. There have been stretches where he's struggled with control and command. So, I do have a little bit of concern. I feel like it's premature to have a full-fledged freak out, but it's definitely on my radar.
I was trying to figure out yesterday if I put Johnny Cueto ahead of Sonny Gray when I was updating my rankings, and I'm doing it right now.
I can't really argue against that. Anybody want to argue against Cueto over Gray?
Even in points leagues.
No, I think that makes perfect sense.
I agree, and reminds me to put Cueto on my list to move him up.
Any other major standouts, guys? Something that's you're just burning on right now. Got to talk about who?
Dustin Pedroia hit 2 home runs last night, and that was your good friend BVP.
Oh yeah,
either that, or Bud Norris just sucks. I think only one of those home runs actually came against Bud Norris.
Yeah, Bud Norris didn't. He pitched one inning, if that, or whatever, right around an inning.
Yeah, he was bad again.
Okay,
I thought it was interesting that David Ortiz got a start in a National League park.
No, it was a home game.
It was in Boston.
Home and home.
Never mind.
It was a split series.
But fine, let's talk.
Two in Atlanta, 2 in Boston.
Maybe you thought it was the Boston Braves.
Yeah, that was a National League park, right? Or were they in the American League?
No, National League.
Did they have leagues back then?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
Leagues have been around for a while.
That's why they call it the senior circuit.
Exactly.
Well, I know that the National League's been around longer than the American League. I didn't know if the American League was around then. It wouldn't have been the National League when the American League was here.
I think the American League started in 1900. Right around then. That's when John McGraw refused to play.
When did the Boston Braves move to Atlanta? Or Milwaukee.
Milwaukee. Like and I thought 40s or 50s?
40s or 50s, yeah. Didn't Hank Aaron play for the Boston Braves for a year or two?
I thought he played for the Milwaukee Braves.
Yeah. I'll look it up. I didn't think he played for Boston.
Okay,
Braves.
Let's.
One thing I do want to talk about is the St. Louis Cardinals, and I want to talk about a couple different things. Adam Wainwright got his first win, but he was still bad. He was still knocked around. I don't think there's much encouraging to take from that. Are we ever going to reach a point where we know exactly who's going to be playing every day for the Cardinals?
No.
Like, do they just have too many people, and does that lower everybody's fantasy value except for, like, Matt Carpenter?
I think that's yes. Yeah.
Because, like, they can't possibly sit Aledmys Diaz. He's hitting the ball way too well right now to hit. He hit his 4th home run last night. He went 2-for-4. Hazel Baker and...
He's done.
And Piscotty and all these guys that are just, like... They're too good to sit.
No,
they've got 4 guys that can play first base.
Guys, I think Hazel Baker appears to be the odd man out, and I think that Piscotty seems pretty safe.
I think Piscotty's safe. I thought Hazel Baker just set yesterday because they were facing a lefty.
Well, I mean, he has not been playing that much. He's not been starting that much. I know he hit a pinch hit homer the other day.
But then you look at, you know, what they did with him when Grichuk was struggling early on. It's just they do have a lot of talented players, and I think that Matheny could just play the hot hand all year long.
Yeah.
Are you moving Piscotty or Grichuk or Carpenter, Holiday down in your rankings?
Well, to be fair, I think I kind of built that in with their rankings because, you know, they had a log jam to start the season, and I wasn't exactly sure how it was gonna fall out.
Is Matt Adams still on the roster?
Yeah, he is.
That seems like step one. Rectify that.
Yeah, that's puzzling for sure.
All right, moving along, let's talk about these pitching prospects. We got an email from Steve. He says, Dear Aaron, Blake, Jose, and Sean, and those would be pitching prospects. Each year I end up fawning over pitching prospects and debating if I should drop someone from my bench for the prospect. Each year I hear about how amazing they're going to be and their low ERA and high A ball. Why do I keep doing this to myself? They often get skipped or pushed back in 2 start weeks. Managers pull them after 5 or 6 innings to preserve their innings. They will get sent back down toward the end of the season if the team is out of the playoffs or to preserve innings. They get rocked quite a bit more than steady starting pitcher I dropped them for, and they get sent back down for the veteran who is healthy again. Why do we all keep drooling over pitching prospects? I guess, as Heath said, quote, the unknown is more exciting than the known, end quote.
I think there's a psychological part of this for sure. But I think there's just a pretty rational strategic aspect to it, too, that when you're pulling guys off of waivers, that it almost always makes sense to go with the upside.
Well,
over the known quantity, steady known quantity who nobody saw fit to roster in the first place.
I think if you look at the 2015 pitching prospects, it's a very good case to be picking these guys up. Severino, now I'll mention the bad ones too, but Aaron Sanchez didn't have a good year. Lance McCullers was certainly worth an ad. Noah Syndergaard, Aaron Nola, Joe Ross. And then, then you had the Carlos Rodons, Taiwan Walker, Adam Conley, Eduardo Rodriguez. Not all of them did well, but Steven Matz was worth owning, certainly. I understand the point that Steve is making, certainly about the innings, but you had some very valuable fantasy guys last year in Severino, McCullers, Syndergaard in particular.
My favorite thing is now, because he's had four bad starts, we're going to start being done with Luis Severino, and I bet a lot of people are going to be dropping Severino for Berríos, for Manaea, all these guys. And that just kind of shows you how totally fickle we are with young players as well. Like, we are really excited up until the moment we see you fail. And then once you fail, we're done with you. And it's just kind of, I get it. We get excited about I've said it before. It's the mystery boat or the mystery box versus a boat. Like, the mystery box could be anything. Jose Berríos could be Noah Syndergaard. He probably won't be, but he could be. He hasn't failed yet. We haven't seen him fail. So it's easy to dream on what he could be.
Well, and the thing is that, I mean, it's not a total mystery box. Like, we know it's probably not going to be a pair of socks with holes in them in the mystery box.
It was last night.
Yeah, it was last night.
I mean, there's plenty of supposedly can't miss pitching prospects who get to the majors and just miss. You know, it's not totally like, I do to an extent subscribe to the there's no such thing as a pitching prospect view of things where like,
which there is a pitching prospect. I mean,
guys come out of nowhere. Jacob deGrom wasn't a pitching prospect. Jacob deGrom was not the more, you know, they called up him and is it Henry Montero?
No, it was Rafael
Montero. Yeah. They called them up at the same time. Rafael Montero was clearly the more well thought of player in prospect circles. He was a top 100 guy. deGrom, I don't think ever even made Baseball America's top 100. deGrom's an ace. So it just, I get why we get excited about these guys, and I'm not saying you shouldn't pick them up, but I think we also kind of tend to lose perspective with them.
Okay, so with this start from Berríos, with Manaea coming up, and with Fulmer coming up for the Tigers, you know, it's the first time we've mentioned him on the podcast, I think. How do you feel about them? Are they all must-own guys?
Here's the reason why, and Al and I are writing about this subject in a little bit different way today. So that will be up hopefully later this afternoon or tomorrow. But the reason why you do go pick these guys up is because whoever you're giving up, whoever you're dropping, you can almost certainly find that production on the waiver wire if this rookie pitcher sucks. Now, maybe rookie pitchers are overvalued, and maybe prospects are overvalued, and that would be a case for trying to go get these guys and then sell them as soon as they do something good. But you're going to be able to replace the production of whoever you're dropping, unless it's a 10-team league. In a 12-team league, you're dropping your sixth starter. You can find Andrew Cashner or Edinson Volquez or whoever on the waiver wire later.
Right. Take that upside. Are you guys down at all on Berríos after last night's start, which was 4 innings, 5 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts?
No, it really, the result wasn't good, and there were certainly a lot of bad moments, but he also had some very good moments.
Yes.
There was plate appearance in particular with Kipnis where he fell behind and then wound up striking him out and made some good pitches.
Yeah, he did not have his command last night, they were saying. Maybe a little bit too amped up. Two-seamer was kind of running all over the place. But if you watched him, you could tell there's a lot to like about Berríos. And Berríos Minaya, who do you like better? Al, I think you kind of said they're all bunchy, but I'll just go around the table. Al, then Heath, then Chris. Berríos or Minaya?
Berríos.
Heath.
I like Berríos better as a prospect. I think he'll be better on a per start basis. I did like the quote about Minaya from Oakland's manager that now I'm not going to be able to remember his name.
Bob Melvin.
That you bring a guy like that up for the long haul.
Yeah.
The Twins can be a little wonky with their prospects sometimes. So I think Berríos will be better on a per start basis.
Chris.
Berríos.
You think so? Melvin said that, by the way, because I wasn't even sure about Minaya's.
Yeah, that was a quote that he said awesome. Yesterday.
Well, that's great. That's good news because we didn't know how long term that would be. And what about Fulmer? If Berríos and Minaya are a 10 on the addometer, where is Michael Fulmer?
7 for me.
Sure.
Okay.
Sounds about right.
Right then. Here's Phil in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And the reason why Fulmer is pitching, by the way, is that Shane Green is on the DL or going to be on the DL with the blister. So again, we don't know if that is long term, but might be worth an at. Phil in Allentown, Pennsylvania has an email, and this is actually something I was working on, a segment I was working on before I read Phil's email, so this is great. Everyone knows the obvious stud buy low candidates by this point, but are there any mid-round ADP guys that have been particularly unlucky so far this season? And he mentions Kyle Seager. So I want less obvious buy low candidates from you guys. I want to start with one guy that is somewhat obvious. He is not quite in this category, but I want to get him out of the way. And that's Adam Jones, who is off to a horrible start. 196. 5 walks, 13 strikeouts. Actually amazing for him, but 196 batting average with 1 home run. So before we get into the mid round guys, is Adam Jones still an obvious buy low candidate for you?
Yeah, he's a buy low candidate.
For sure.
I don't think he's going to be this bad at all. The problem for me with buying low is I ended up drafting him a lot because he fell a little farther than I thought. I was buying low in the draft. And I don't necessarily feel like that's the case anymore. But, yeah, I mean, there are people out there that are going to give up Adam Jones for very little. And I'd be a buyer.
Would you give up Dexter Fowler for Adam Jones?
Yeah.
Okay.
But again, that probably doesn't make any, that's not the type of trades that I think usually get done. Like
it's just trading two players from the same position who are pretty similar-ish.
It's a pretty clear case of one guy thinking he's smarter than the other
guy.
They are not
similar at all.
And they're coming into this year, my view wasn't that they were similar at all. I thought Jones was far superior.
Yeah.
All right. Well, forget that. You can make your own trades at home. Guys, give me some mid-round buy-low candidates.
I think Seager was the perfect example. I wrote about him yesterday.
It's striking how similar everything is from his career line to this year, except for his BABIP.
And another guy that's very much like that is Anthony Rendon.
Yeah.
People have tweeted at me a lot about where is Rendon's power? Did he lose his power? And you look at his hard contact rate, his line drive rate, but basically everything except for his actual production, and it looks just like what he did in 2014. Cool. I have no issues with buying low on Anthony Rendon.
And this guy's not, I wouldn't say so much mid-round as late-round. And Adam, I know you're not a big fan, but Marcus Semien, the batting average has plummeted, but the power's still there, and his contact rate isn't horrible. So I think as long as the power is still there and he's not striking out a ton, he's definitely going to bounce back.
I think you could say Brian Dozier, 217 BABIP. Everything else looks pretty good. Jonathan Scope, kind of similar.
That's a good one.
Kind of similar place. Even Randall Grichuk, I think people are really disappointed with the way he's playing to start the season. I think a lot of that is the result of a really low BABIP.
Okay. I'm going to throw out some names at you, and you tell me, would you want to buy low on these guys, or are you, kind of scared off at this point? And I guess we'll frame it in, like, are they going to be more or less must-start guys rest of season? Let's start with Brandon Crawford, who is off to a bad start with a .236 average and 2 home runs, but 12 walks, 16 strikeouts. Brandon Crawford, would you buy low on Crawford, or would you, I'd rather not?
Definitely buying low on Crawford.
I'm not going to add the definitely, but I would buy low on Crawford.
Yeah.
Russell Martin.
Yeah, I'll see why not. He's not this bad.
He can't be this bad.
Oh, man. 4 walks and 29 strikeouts for Russell Martin after 4 Ks yesterday. He is just something wrong with him. Okay, so we'd buy low on Martin. Devin Mesoraco, batting 140 with a 160 slugging.
Here's the one where I'm not buying low.
Yeah, I mean, if it was really low, like somebody dropped him.
Exactly.
I could probably pick him up, but like, if I have Yan Gomes and I'm disappointed with him, I'm not dropping Yan Gomes for Devin Mesoraco or something like that.
Okay. How about two guys who pitched last night against each other, Colin McHugh and Hisashi Iwakuma?
McHugh for sure. His peripherals are pretty much identical to what they've been when he's been good, and he has a 420 BABIP.
Is his walk rate the same?
His walk rate is actually lower. The only thing is that he's giving up more fly balls, but home runs haven't actually been the issue for him this year. It's just been batted balls, really.
But if I could take you to task on Colin McHugh, he was only good for 1 year, and 2 out of 6 months last year he had a good ERA. The other 4 he was pretty bad, so I'm not sure that he's a good pitcher to begin with.
I think he's probably good in the like Jose Quintana mold.
Okay. Not spectacular, but solid.
Man, how bad is that Astros pitching staff?
Well, how bad are the Astros right now?
They are really bad.
How about Iwakuma, guys? And last 16 starts. All right, so I broke down Iwakuma's 2015 season, and he had 3 starts early in the year, and then he went on the DL. He was horrible in those 3 starts. He came off the DL. He made 1 start. It was brutal. And after those first 4 starts, Iwakuma had a 7.17 ERA. 16 starts after that, he had a 2.82 ERA, 18 walks, 97 strikeouts, and 108 and a third. Much more like what he did 2 seasons, or I guess it was 3 seasons ago at this point when he was amazing. So would you buy low on Iwakuma? I think the thing that scares me is that he failed his physical with the Dodgers. Yeah. That'd probably be what would keep me from doing it, but how about you?
It's not just that he failed his physical. He's made 30 starts once out of 3 years, and I would buy low if it's really low. I'm sure Al is probably more optimistic about him than I am, though.
Well, I mean, first of all, I was going to say exactly everything that Adam just said.
Yeah.
So he summarized that perfectly. But, I mean, maybe I'm a little more optimistic, but I have my concerns as well because of the history, the injury history, and him failing the physical this year. So I've got that little glimmer of doubt about Iwakuma, but so I'm not, I might go for as deep a discount as you, Heath, but if that's available, I'm definitely ready to take the plunge.
Who would you rather have, McHugh or Iwakuma?
I'd rather have Iwakuma.
I would rather have Iwakuma than McHugh.
Yeah.
Jacoby Ellsbury. Buy low or avoid?
I'm avoiding. I'm really worried that he's just past his peak now. And he's just had too many injury issues. And I just can't buy in.
Okay. Anybody disagree?
I mean, no. The good news is he's healthy right now.
Yeah, that is good.
That was a positive.
For now.
There's that.
Here are some things that caught my eye from yesterday's action. I'm going to run through them. You tell me what stands out to you. Just pick as many or as few as you want. Freddie Freeman homered. The Braves snapped a 15-game homerless streak. Still lost. Odubel Herrera drew 2 more walks. Hanley Ramirez stole his 3rd base in 3 attempts after stealing 6 bases in 9 attempts in 105 games last season. So 3 steals for Hanley. Bryce Harper, 2 more walks and his 4th stolen base, distancing himself even more from Mike Trout. Starling Marte, 7 steals already on the season, on pace for about 50. Marte has stolen 41, 30, and 30 bases in 135, 135, and 153 games in his last 3 seasons. Robinson Cano hit his 8th home run. Jose Altuve, his 6th home run and his 11th double. He's the number 1 player in fantasy so far. And on his way to eclipsing his 15 home runs that he hit last season, that's Jose Altuve. And as Chris mentioned, Aledmys Diaz hit his 4th home run. So that's what caught my eye. What stands out to you guys in that group?
Yeah, I mean, these are all things that caught my eye. And I think, you know, if we're going to, wait on pronouncing Berríos correctly, mm-hmm. I do think Odubel Herrera has earned the right to have his name pronounced correctly.
I think Odubel's done enough.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. He's walked enough.
What did I say?
Good job, Audible.
What did I say? Odubel?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, doable is, it is.
I think I kind of go back and forth with it. But yeah, all these are noteworthy. I think the one that probably surprised me the most was Hanley Ramirez. Because I had really given up on him as a steal source. And granted, you know, 3 and 3+ weeks, I mean, doesn't necessarily mean anything, although obviously that's a good pace. But yeah, that was the one that I, you know, saw in the box score and was like, really? Yeah, that's surprising.
I will say the list of players that I would give up in a Jose Altuve trade is almost the entire major leagues.
Wait, what? Say that again?
Like, there's, I guess I could say it the other way. The list of players that I would give Jose Altuve up for is down to like 2 or 3.
Okay. So is it still Trout, Goldschmidt, Harper, Donaldson before Altuve?
Chris and I had a debate about this last week and wrote about it. And I actually put Altuve third. And my justification for that was I think he can be almost exactly what AJ Pollock was last year, and AJ Pollock finished third.
See, I get that, but I feel like when we look at what a player did and where they ranked, you have to take into account, like, Mike Trout had that injury that caused him to hit poorly in August. That might not happen again. So, like,
right,
that doesn't mean he's going to finish third if he has the exact same season as AJ Pollock.
He doesn't have to, but it does. It also means
that's the logic you used.
Okay, Chris. I don't think you had any 100% certainties in your top five. We're dealing in probabilities here.
Here's the thing with Jose Altuve.
He's also number one right now ahead of Bryce Harper.
He is number one right now ahead of Bryce Harper, which is great. If he sustains this 30% home run to fly ball ratio, I totally agree he will be the number one player in fantasy.
My argument was that I think he's going to hit 20 home runs this year, and Chris thought that was asinine.
I just think he could hit 20 home runs this year, but if he hits 13 or 14 from here on out, he's probably not the number one player. He's probably not the number three player. And I like Jose Altuve. He's right. Awesome, but like, I don't think 3.5 weeks of him hitting for a little more power than you expect means that he's fundamentally different as a player. This was a guy that we were taking 12th or 13th.
He hit 15 home runs last year. 15 to 20 is not fundamentally different
right, but
at all.
Is 5 home runs really the difference between taking him 13th as we were before the season and taking him 3rd?
Oh, I took him top 8 several times this year.
Okay.
And I mean, look, it's more than that. I mean, it's a lot of doubles, it's a lot of walks.
Sure.
I mean, it's a big explosion. And granted, it's less than a month's time.
And he's on pace for like 50 stolen bases, which is somewhat sustainable.
Yeah.
Yes, sure.
But this is kind of a case study in you know, perception too, because Adam, I don't know if you remember this, but 2 years ago, I was all over Jose Altuve in drafts.
Absolutely.
And everybody was like, why? What's so special? And I said, well, this guy could add power to the batting average and stolen bases. And of course, it didn't happen. So it's 2 years later, and maybe, well, and actually, it happened a little bit last year. Looks like it's happening in a big way now, or it could be. And that reminds me of Leonis Martin. Because it's kind of the same thing when he first came up. Oh, he's hit for power in the minors, and he's never hit for power in the majors. And all of a sudden this year, we're seeing a little bit of power. So I wonder if there are some guys that it takes them years to make that translation.
Well, there's definitely guys that develop power at 25 or 26. I don't think that's really that big of a shock at all. The other thing I think that's definitely probably the most sustainable part of Jose Altuve's increased production is he only played like 60 games last year, I think, or he's played like 60 or 65 games with George Springer and Carlos Correa behind him in the order. This is a guy that gets on base 230 times a year, but he'd never scored 90 runs.
Mm-hmm.
If he plays a whole season with those two behind him, he's going to score 125 runs.
I want to go back to Odubel Herrera. Would you rather have Herrera or Steven Piscotty?
I'd rather have Piscotty, but it wasn't a discussion for me 2 weeks ago, and it's a tough pick now.
I've been, I think, maybe the highest guy on Piscotty, so I will say Piscotty for sure.
He's having a great year, by the way. Chris, you want to jump in there, Herrera or Piscotty?
Piscotty, still.
I guess I shouldn't say great, but he's doing well. Herrera or Steven Souza?
Herrera.
That's tough. I think I want to say that I've got Souza higher, but I might take Herrera over him now.
I think I'd still go with Souza.
Herrera only really worth picking up in either points or OBP leagues? Like in a standard 5x5 roto, Well, that's five outfielders. I mean, he's got to be owned. But is he going to hurt you in those standard categories if you're not getting credit for the walks?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking is, like, in a 5x5 league, he's giving you batting average, although I'm not sure him being a 290 hitter is totally sustainable. He's giving you runs, and he's giving you, I guess, a little bit in stolen bases, but not that much. I just think there's a lot more chance of Steven Souza helping you in 3 of 5 categories.
So, we've got about 20 minutes left before we get into the rest of the show, which includes Will Myers, Matt Kemp, Ketel Marte, who's hot, Tyler White, who isn't. I've got to tell you about FanDuel. If you play daily fantasy baseball, you better be playing on FanDuel.com. I love how easy FanDuel makes it. You can go to the website, or I use the free app, and setting your lineup is both simple, and it's really a lot of fun and very challenging and very rewarding when it pays off. I've won money on FanDuel. Our listeners have won money on FanDuel. The other three guys on this show today have won money on FanDuel. It's time for you to do the same. Contests start at just $1. There is no commitment, no season-long commitment. You play as often or as little as you want. Special offer we've got for new users. If you use our promo code HOMERUN, one word, no spaces, HOMERUN, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner when you go to FanDuel.com and enter HOMERUN as the promo code. Here's what happens. You enter your first league and either win a cash prize in that league, or FanDuel is going to automatically refund your entry fee up to $10 for additional play. Again, FanDuel.com, and the promo code is HOMERUN. Speaking of home runs, what a transition. What a great transition. I wasn't even expecting this.
What a host.
Yes, thank you. Will Myers and Matt Kemp homered yesterday. Will Myers has 5 home runs, 12 RBIs, 12 runs, 2 steals. He's off to a nice start. He's gotten hot. Myers, in his first 32 games last year before the wrist injury, hit 5 home runs with 10 doubles. So there was power there. It was a 202 ISO.
So high.
I heard a whisper there from Chris Towers.
I'm hearing a voice.
Sell high on Will Myers?
Yeah. The plate discipline's atrocious. He's not going to keep hitting for this batting average. He's a consistent injury risk. The power is nice, but I don't see any way he keeps this up.
What would selling high be for him? What would you be looking for Will Myers?
Adam Jones.
If I could get Adam Jones for Will Myers, I don't think anybody would do that. That's hard to say, because how much upside potential does Will Myers still seem to have at this point? I'm not quite sure. How many people still view him as Will Myers, this young potential filled player?
Look, I agree with the assessment, and I would sell high on Myers. I'm surprised he's 25. I actually did think he was like 27.
Already. Yeah, I mean, he's been around for, what, 4 years?
Yes.
Okay. How about Matt Kemp? Matt Kemp is – let me look up where he is in the outfield rankings right now. Last year, Kemp was 22nd in points and 17th in roto. It doesn't really feel that way, but he drove in 100. He scored 80 runs. He had 12 steals, and right now Kemp is batting .274 with a .548 slugging. Only 2 walks on the year, so a .287 on base, geez. But, you know, so far so good for Matt Kemp. Al, this was a guy that you were higher on than most people. You want to talk about Kemp?
Yeah, well, and the reason why was because, you know, you mentioned the ranking last year, which was good, but that was with just a horrible month of May, one of the worst months I can remember, you know, somebody who had been a fantasy staple for an entire month. And but aside from that, I mean, he was extremely productive and probably would have been top 12, top 15. So yeah, I think he's pretty much picking up where he left off.
I think he's kind of a player that you just have to own and never look at the box score or track his numbers throughout the whole season, because he's really frustrating and streaky, and then at the end of the year he kind of does the same things.
So last year, Kemp was number 22 in points, number 17 in roto. Right now, he is number 23 in points and number 17 in roto. Almost exactly the same. okay. 5 up. Ketel Marte, 63% owned. We were talking about dropping Ketel Marte. He's obviously been dropped because he's down to 63% owned. Heath, this was a guy that you were kind of high on entering the season, and he led off Marte for the first time yesterday. Last seven games, he's 13 for 30 with three doubles, no walks, three strikeouts. Are you encouraged by Marte?
Absolutely, yes. This is the type of production that I was hoping for when I drafted Ketel Marte way too much at the end of drafts before the season. I hope you didn't drop him. Now, again, if you did, he's probably still going to be like somewhere between the 8th and 13th best shortstop. So it's not like you just lost a superstar. I don't think there's a huge amount of upside. But especially in roto leagues, extremely nice option as a middle infielder.
I think you called him a superstar. Or said not a superstar, but like that could be a whole category.
Superstars.
Yeah.
Okay.
You guys ever see the movie Superstar?
No. Maybe.
It's horrible.
I'm thinking of a Stoop Kid from Hey Arnold. Which is a reference that maybe you are all too old to get.
Yeah, the Stoop made me think of the movie Friday.
Okay, that works also.
Did you know that the Miami Hurricanes quarterback, who's awesome and will be maybe a first-round pick, his mom is Felicia from Friday?
Oh.
Yeah,
no way. I did not know that.
And did you know I've never seen Friday?
That doesn't surprise me at all. You wouldn't like it.
That's bad. That's a bad
Adam, I do want to say I love your continued optimism about the football program.
I have no optimism about the program, but he is really good. Marte.
I do not ever go watch Friday because I don't want to hear your bad take on it.
Ketel Marte or Ian Desmond, rest of season?
Marte.
Desmond.
Ketel Marte or Trevor Story, who homered yesterday?
I have Story one spot ahead of Marte.
That seems low.
For Marte?
For Story. I just, like, I don't really see what Marte's upside is. Like, he's nice. He's fine.
Yeah.
That would be runs, stolen bases, and batting average.
Those are...
Sure.
Chris devalues those categories.
Yeah. I also have Marte 1 behind Story.
Okay. Chris Davis with a K is 67% owned. Last 11 games, he's 11 for 31 with three homers. We talked about this. This guy gets super hot. If Chris Davis is out there in a three outfielder league, are you picking him up just for the hot streak?
No.
Okay.
But he is a buy low in Roto.
Well, he's not a buy low anymore, is he?
Well, I guess people are paying attention to this. I in my own little world, I'm perceiving that he's still undervalued.
Victor Martinez is 82% owned. He's off to a great start. 302, 380, 587. Now, Martinez is homered, I think, in two straight games or two out of three or something. But those were his first home runs since the first two games of the season when he hit pinch hit home runs at Miami. So Victor Martinez is 82% owned. Is he under-owned?
I don't think he is because of the DH only. And, of course, you know why he's been hot lately. And it's because I dropped him in the podcast league.
I did see that, Al. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But I thought of you when I hit the drop button. I thought of you, Adam, because you called me out on draft day for that pick.
Well, it was a bad pick only for your team because didn't you already have Ortiz?
I have Ortiz.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I just didn't see that there was going to be any way I was going to play him. So it was worth a shot, but I drafted him to see if he could build value and then I dropped him prematurely. So good job by me.
I mean, the most encouraging thing for him is he is actually having success against righties and lefties early this year. So if he can do that, he'll be good again.
Zach Cozart, 33% owned. Is he under-owned?
Maybe a little.
I think so.
I mean, what percentage of our leagues are roto leagues?
Let's say 50.
I think about 40.
So he's under-owned. He should be owned in roto.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. And Tyler White is one down today. White is 81% owned. He sat yesterday. Now, White homered in three straight games earlier this year. Since then, he's 8 for 54 with two home runs and two doubles, six walks, 19 strikeouts. You know, let's say one of those stud pitching prospects is out there. Manaea, Berríos, the guy in the Tigers whose name I always forget.
Michael Fulmer.
If they're out there and you have Tyler White, would you... odds are you didn't draft White to be your starter, so would you drop Tyler White?
Yeah. I would drop him. I think I'd drop him for everybody except for Fulmer. I don't think I'd drop him for Fulmer.
And the one thing with White is that, like, he's kind of at the point where the longer any slump goes, the greater chance he just loses his job is. Like, they do actually have other options if they tire of him.
And they're looking, I mean, they have to be, as bad as the season has started, be looking for a change to make. And that's an easy one to make.
Yeah.
Well, I'm holding on to Tyler White just a little bit longer. And yeah, obviously if they bring AJ Reed up, then that's that.
Yeah.
But, he's already shown more power than I expected from him. And look, in a points league, I think he still has potential for a great walk to strikeout ratio. In a roto league, you know, he's good for my corner infield spot. So I'm hanging on.
All right. Rotation. Looking at some of the pitchers from yesterday, Chris talked about Adam Wainwright. Here are five others that are owned in most leagues. Patrick Corbin. Ah, man, I'm annoyed. Justin Verlander pitched pretty well. The final run he gave up was an inherited runner that scored. Jeff Samardzija, Marco Estrada, who pitched really well. I think it was scoreless going into the seventh. And then he gave up three runs in two-thirds of an inning. Deonna Navarro hit a big triple in that game. And Matt Moore struck out nine Orioles, gave up three runs. Only seven walks in 32 innings for Moore. So we got Corbin, Verlander, Samardzija, Estrada, and Moore. Chris Towers, anything really jump out with those guys?
I've been very skeptical of Matt Moore and apparently Tampa Bay left-handed pitchers in general.
Yeah.
Don't know what that bias is, but the control is very promising, especially since it started late last season when he went down to the minors and came back up, and you know his control was a lot better. I was skeptical that he would be able to sustain that because that's been his career, but it's very, very promising.
You said you were frustrated over Patrick Corbin, Adam, and I'm frustrated trying to figure out why I was excited about him as I was.
Because he's had a good career. He was good.
He was good.
Very faint praise
for 1 year. He had a good year.
I think he's a lefty who throws pretty hard and seems to have good stuff, and he didn't really have any bad years, you know? Like, it's not
right.
It's not like he's Colin McHugh, who had one good year in a
Well, I mean, he was pretty awful his rookie year.
Well, he also didn't have a season as good as McHugh's.
Right, he was awful 1 year, or bad 1 year, and then good, but certainly not great his second year.
Well, okay.
I'm sorry.
I've gone through this many times with Patrick Corbin, and I know you're going to laugh at it, but my opinion is in that second season, he was really good until like his last seven starts. And that boost, you're talking about a stud basically until those last, I don't know, however many it was in 2013. And then he needed Tommy John, and I don't think you can fairly judge him last year, but he still was fine.
I was a great student until we started doing homework and tests.
He had a 2.36 ERA on August 9th that year. He had a 2.45 ERA after a complete game shutout. Oh no, complete game two runs, 10 strikeouts in 2013 on August 20th. And then in his last seven starts, Corbin had a ERA of 8.00. So
okay, here's what I'll say. Yeah. My thoughts about Corbin are: it's not like I'm dropping or anything. I'm not going to be starting him next week. Well, he's probably a two-star pitcher. Maybe I will. We'll see. Around the right time we reach the All-Star break this year, he's going to reach 500 innings pitched in his career. Mm-hmm. Right now, he's got a 3.84 ERA, a 1.24 WHIP, and 7.5 Ks per nine. If you get to those numbers, 500 innings into your career at age 26, I'm going to have a hard time being excited about you actually being a really good pitcher.
You're totally starting him next week at Miami and at Atlanta.
Yeah.
If he struggles in those two starts, and Miami's actually been good against lefties, but if he struggles, then we can talk more about it.
Marlins could hurt him.
Yeah.
But Atlanta won't. They better not.
The way he's pitching right now, anyone could. Except for maybe the Atlanta.
Matt Moore.
I'm going to have to make an update. I think I'm going to go Matt Moore as well.
Any interest in any of Al, Corbin, or Moore?
Moore.
Okay. Any interest in these guys? Steven Wright, they're all owned in 30% of leagues or less. Steven Wright, Jeremy Hellickson, Josh Tomlin, Nick Tropiano, Martin Perez, Justin Nicolino. Mixed league interest.
Somewhat interested in Chris Tillman, but that's kind of up and down. He's been pretty good so far.
He's 60% owned, Chris.
I'm not going to fall for Jeremy Hellickson.
Nope.
What do you like? I think I'm more intrigued by Steven Wright because he throws a knuckleball. And so I'm more likely to believe that maybe his knuckleball is just good this year. We've seen pitchers, knuckleball pitchers, just be good for a year.
Well, and we've seen, and it seems like you can't be a knuckleball pitcher and not peak until your 30s.
Right. Well, you've got to figure out, I mean, it takes a while to master that pitch.
Yeah.
Like 15 years of trying it.
He did have a, what, 2.59 ERA in 2014 with the Red Sox in 14 starts.
He's not that bad. Is he going to leave the rotation when Eduardo Rodriguez comes back? Eduardo Rodriguez.
He is not going to leave the rotation if he's pitching like this.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, as long as Joe Kelly is out, then you can give Henry Owens a boot.
Yeah. All right, guys.
I do just have trouble buying into knuckleball pitchers just because, like, on a start-to-start basis, they're basically a random number generator, and it's not like, oh, he was really on tonight. It's just like the thing didn't happen, and it just feels kind of random.
That was very Jonah Carey-like.
Thank you.
Just
That's high praise.
Heath, who's your favorite FanDuel pitcher tonight?
I may just watch some basketball. It's a 4-game slate. I'll play, and I'll give you my favorite pitcher. But it's a 4-game slate in the afternoon if you want to play there. It's a 4-game slate in the evening. If you want to play there, you can play at the all-day slate, but that's really risky if you're going to use anyone from the later games. So that was that a ringing endorsement?
Kenta Maeda is my favorite pitcher.
What's that?
Kenta Maeda.
Yeah, I think that will be the quote-unquote chalk.
Yeah.
I don't see any way that I can... I mean, as a contrarian play, I guess Jose could be good Jose for the first time this year.
I think Clay Buchholz is probably the best play of the night. Just that matchup against Atlanta. I know that's he hasn't been good this season, but...
Like, Kenta Maeda, we think, is much better than Clay Buchholz, right?
Yes. On the other hand, I also, and maybe this is dumb of me, but I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop with Kenta Maeda. Yeah. I think he's pretty good. I don't think he's nearly as good as he, and nobody's one run in 4 starts good sustainably, but like, he has 1+ pitch. And it's a really good pitch. That slider's really good, but the rest of his stuff is just kind of okay. And this was the scouting report on him coming over. This is not just like reacting to 4 starts. It's confirming what people were saying about him coming over. And it's just like, I don't buy that he's an ace. And so I think at some point he is going to get hit hard. The somewhat middling stuff will catch up to him.
So you don't think he's going to strand 100% of his runners the rest of the season?
Look, it's entirely possible. I mean, I'm sure it's happened before.
Grinke did it last year, right?
It only seemed like it.
I actually do keep thinking I keep pairing them in my mind, though. Grinke's another guy who's just kind of got like pretty good stuff, but pitches up.
And he's had 2 years where he was the best pitcher in baseball.
Yeah.
Let's read some emails here to finish the show. John says, hey, Chevy, Dennis, and Norm. Oh, I know that. Weekend update.
Oh.
Yeah. John wants to know if we should sell high on Ryan Braun. And I honestly, I know Scott's not on the show. I think he sort of, I think he underreacted to the 140 games thing. Cause I think that's a bigger deal than Scott was making it out to be personally. That they're trying to limit Braun to 140 games because of the back surgery that he had in the offseason. Would you guys try to sell high on Ryan Braun?
I'm always open to selling high on anyone. Because by definition, if you're selling high, you're getting more than what their true value is.
But do you think it's worth your time? Because I don't.
I don't think you'll get anybody to buy into it unless you're in a Brewers fan league.
I don't know. Why? Like, he was really good last year.
What's selling high on him? Getting top 8 outfielder value?
Yeah. He's unlikely to finish as a top 8 outfielder.
Right. So I don't think you're going to get anyone to pay top 8 outfielder value for him.
I think there might be someone who like didn't realize he's only going to play 140 games.
But they could look at his last 3 seasons and see he hasn't played more than 140 games.
And I guess I'm with Scott on this because I don't think it's that big of a deal because he's producing so much on a per game basis. I mean, if it was 120 games, obviously that'd be a big deal. But, you know, that's the equivalent of like one little DL stint. Grant, he could have on top of that maybe, but
well, yeah, that's the point.
You don't think he's going to produce at this level all year, though.
Why not?
Yeah, I think he'd be close. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I have him as a look. I mean, definitely top 15. I don't think I had top 10 a top 15 outfielder. So, I mean, I'm agreeing with you in a way, Heath, because I think you would have to get a top eight or a top six outfielder to make it a true sell high. And it's just not worth my time.
This would be, if he produced at this level for the entire year, the best year of his career.
All right, look, it's not this level, okay? But it's being, you know, an all-star, basically. He's totally capable of being an all-star.
I would expect he will be an all-star.
Well, then you don't sell high on him if you think he's going to be an all-star.
I don't think being an all-star is very relevant.
Oh, God.
Omar Fonte was an all-star.
For goodness sake, if he's going to have forget it. This is from Steven. Hey, Bubbles, Julian. I mean, can you be less literal, please? I'm not talking about him putting up this exact production the rest of the year, but if he has a good year, Ryan Braun, where he is all-star Ryan Braun, and being an all-star at the outfield position is a pretty big deal because outfielders are good. There are a lot of really good outfielders. I mean, that's a big...
Hey, okay. Azer?
Here's an email
next time you're in the South Florida office, I'm going to introduce you to Heath Cummings. I think you guys haven't met.
All right. From Steven.
Heath Cummings is a pedant.
Sorry, Chris. I'm just trying to finish the show here.
I'm just trying to make fun of Heath.
I appreciate
that. I think
that's
more important.
I really do. Bubbles, Julian, and Ricky is Trailer Park Boys. I know that now. What's your thoughts on post-hype sleeper starting pitcher Daniel Norris? Anybody care about Daniel Norris?
I mean, if somebody dropped him in a deeper league because he got sent down,
I would.
Yeah, that's about the extent of it. I can't get too excited.
Yeah, the rest of the question asks if you would continue to stash Glasnow or Giolito. I would absolutely do that instead of adding him.
All right. We've got Philip from a city in Florida. Let's put him in Margate, Florida.
Tamarack.
Okay. Oh, they're very close. Very close. He says, hey, Tion, Rosanda, and Lisa. I have no idea who those people are. Would you drop Tyler White for any of these guys? Lowry, Escobar, Duffy, Freeze, or Plouffe?
No.
TLC.
Oh, okay.
Oh, left eye Lisa.
Not Matt Duffy? You wouldn't drop Tyler White?
I would drop him for Duffy. The rest of this, I mean, if we're talking for a utility position, then Duffy would be the only one.
Okay. Robin, Jim, and Paul. Dear Robin, Jim, and Paul, this is from Jason in Jacksonville. I need average and RBIs in a 5x5 roto league. Which of these pitchers would you attempt to trade, and who would you try to obtain? So who is the most tradable in this bunch? Lester, Mats, Quintana, Salazar, Archer, Velasquez.
I would start with Quintana and hope that somebody would give me average and RBIs.
Nobody likes Jose Quintana. You're not going to get anything for him. We went over this. Nobody thinks he's as good as he is.
Right.
Nobody values Jose Quintana. I think Velasquez is the one you trade.
I was thinking Velasquez or Mats.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd really like Velasquez to have one more good start before I traded him, because I'm afraid his value has fallen quite a bit too.
I don't know that it's fallen all that much, and I'm picking him because I'm looking at, you know, this is pretty solid pitching right here. I'm not looking to trade Velasquez, but I've got surplus here, so if I need offense, I can afford to lose Velasquez, and he is going to probably be perceived for a high value right now.
I don't mind trading Velasquez just in a vacuum, just because, like, that one start was incredible, and the upside that he has is clear, but he's also kind of still a two-pitch pitcher. The third pitch is still a work in progress. It's hard to be a right-handed pitcher and only have two pitches, because you're going to have platoon split issues against lefties, and that can limit your upside.
All right, that's it for today's show. By the way, Robin, Jim, and Paul are Milwaukee Brewers from the early 90s. Robin Yount, Paul Molitor, and Jim Gantner. There you go. For Heath Cummings, Chris Towers, Al Melchior, and Ryan Braun, I am Adam Azer. We're back tomorrow to tell you about week 4.